Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 246 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and her story of recovery from COVID-19. Yeah, you heard me right. This is going to be an absolutely terrific show. So sit down and take notes.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Oh my gosh. Before we begin, just know that the episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie doke. Now, here's your first official reminder to click onto iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. Why? Because I'm sitting here waiting to hear your feedback. Love, love, love to hear your feedback. And it's just wonderful. All this time, all these years we've been doing this, hearing your voice means everything to me. So that's your first official reminder. Now it's time for her. Oh, boy. So we're living in the time of COVID-19. You're probably sitting there somewhere, sheltered in place, locked down, doors are locked, mask in place, gloves all over the place. It's just a crazy time, and it's an amazing time. All of us are living through history. Never in the entire history of this globe have we ever shut down economies, nor had a pandemic the way we've had this. One of my best friends in my life is currently the Georgia State Senator, Kay Kirkpatrick. Kay and I have known each other since medical schools. She has dirt on me and I have dirt on her. How can I say this better? She and I know each other extremely well. And oh my gosh, one day I get a phone call from her and there she is down there outside of Atlanta, telling me she's having some symptoms because she believes that someone she came in contact with when they had their last legislative session several days prior was coughing and having issues. And next thing you know, Kay tested positive for the COVID virus and went through quite an interesting experience that I want all of you to hear about, because Kay is an orthopedic surgeon, retired now. So she's a physician. She's also a state senator and a woman who just went through an incredible experience. She is deeply involved in her work as a Republican state senator, serving as chairman of the Senate Ethics Committee, member of the Senate Health and Human Services, Insurance and Labor and Veterans, Military and Homeland Security Committees. She's deeply passionate about her work as a public servant, but also in the background as a physician. So she's got intel at a much, much deeper level. Kay, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thanks, Pam. Always good to hear your voice.
Oh, my gosh. Kay, you've gone through a hell of an experience. You know, tell us, you know, what it was like when you were living through this. And was it mild, moderate? I mean, I know all the answers, but, you know, I know that all of our Her podcast members are sitting back listening and saying, wow, what was it like?
Well, I would say that my episode of COVID-19 was somewhere between mild and moderate. I got a fever 2 days after being in the Senate chamber with a guy who ended up testing positive, which nobody knew at the time. He came to work sick, which is a terrible idea. And as a result, five of us ended up getting the virus from him. And so the entire legislature, once his test results came out, was quarantined for 14 days. And that's 230 people who were, you know, staying at home. So I got a fever 2 days after that, immediately called my physician. And because I am in the high risk group from the standpoint of age, she referred me and made arrangements for my testing, which was done the very next day. And sadly, I didn't get the results for about a week because of the backlog of testing at that time. But she, my doctor, put me on strict isolation, even from my husband. And so I spent 2 weeks in my bedroom, and he was very strict. He's a physician also and really would not let me out of the room. So he very nicely brought me food, although part of this virus is you kind of lose your sense of taste and smell. And so there wasn't much appetite anyway, but he would glove up and put a mask on, bring a tray in for me, and then I would let him know when I was finished and he would come and get it. We disinfected everything all the time. And so I think we were extremely meticulous about it. And the result of that was that he did not get sick. And so we're both very happy about that, although he's convinced that he probably had it. But who knows? Most people, a lot of people don't even know they have it because the symptoms can be quite mild.
I think that the numbers now, you and I as physicians are very much interested in knowing the population statistics, you know, just from what we call an epidemiologic status. And what we're finding out now, apparently, with COVID-19 is that there's a very large number. And if you look at countries like Iceland and Sweden and South Korea, Singapore, and Taiwan, and look at the general testing results, that at least 50% of the people who test positive are completely asymptomatic. They don't even have anything. Or it's so mild, you blow it off. You don't even think about it for a second. So that means that, you know, if we look at our entire population right now, and we just got in two new studies from California, one in Los Angeles that was done by USC, and another one done by Stanford up closer to Stanford in Santa Clara County, they found was that, once again, affirming that the mass majority of people were actually asymptomatic. So they're just walking around, shedding the virus, doing their thing, but they didn't get much of any kind of symptoms or ridiculous, you know, very, very mild. So it sounds like you were mild to moderate. Now, you were quarantined, as it were, in your bedroom for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, and the interesting part of it was when I talked to my doctor about it, when she put me in isolation, she said, you know, the first 24 to 48 hours are going to tell us kind of which way this thing is going to go. And so my poor husband slept on an air mattress in the office just down the hall for the first couple of days because he thought I was, as we would say in the South, fixing to die. And so fortunately, I got better, and I actually thought I was getting a lot better. And then, and the criteria for me getting out of my room and having the run of the house were two things. One, I had to be at least 7 days after the onset of symptoms. And two, I had to be without fever for 3 days with no use of Tylenol. And of course, anti-inflammatories were not recommended for fever control because of negative impacts related to the virus. And I thought I was just about done, but every time I'd get to 2.5 days, I'd get a fever again. And so one of the things that seems to be common with this virus, which I learned the hard way, is that there's sort of a second wave of symptoms that can happen during week two. And that is why it took an entire 14 days for me to get a febrile completely without a fever. And the cough continued a few days after that. and part of that maybe because I was still working and talking on the phone a lot. But that was a very interesting thing in a bad way.
What about the cough? And when did the cough start up? And, you know, where are you at now with the cough? Because it's been a month now.
Yeah, the cough started pretty much right away. I would say shortly after the fever. Fever came first. And not a productive cough, just a dry, very annoying, deep, hacky cough. And, you know, Hall's Mentholyptus, honey lemon, I went through a couple bags of those, but really didn't want to. I'm not big on taking medication, didn't really want to take anything more, but eventually ended up calling my doc and getting a prescription for an inhaler, which actually did help quite a bit. And the cough would be okay in the morning and then kind of get progressively worse throughout the day. So that's all pretty much gone. It lasted longer than the fever, but I'm pretty much back to 100% now. Energy level was pretty down for the whole 2 weeks, but not flat on my back like I would have been with the flu.
Now, I understand you recently went to Emory University down there in Atlanta, and you had your antibodies tested. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit about what that's going to help us with?
Well, we hope what it's going to tell us is, looking backwards, how your immune system reacted to having the virus. And the level of antibodies should be able to tell us how immune you are to the virus, although I think a lot of that is still early days and we really don't know. But that could make me superwoman if I actually have a very good antibody titer. That would mean that I'm highly unlikely to get reinfected with the virus. The thing is that just like the COVID test, it's taking a while to get the results. I had that done last Friday, and I wanted to do it through a study because if the results are positive, I'll be able to donate plasma also through this study that they can use in their treatment. They're doing a study on convalescent plasma, so taking blood from people who have had the virus and are immune, supposedly, and giving it to people who are acutely very sick. And so I did that through Emory University, went down there last week, and they told me it might be up to 2 weeks before getting the results. They took a lot of blood. They took 10 different tubes of blood. So I'm sure they tested for a whole bunch of other things that I don't even know about.
Yeah, well, if you're going to be donating plasma, then they've got to make sure, you know, like, do you have other issues? You got to be a, you know, sort of a clean machine before they're going to share that little, you know, convalescent plasma with somebody else. So I'm sure that's one of the main reasons for all of that. You know, it's interesting. One of the things that we're now watching is this whole issue of, you know, who really is at higher risk for getting, for contracting this and having symptoms. Say, for instance, you had very mild to, you know, as you said, mild to moderate symptoms. You did extremely well, but I happen to know something about you that maybe my Her podcast listeners don't know, because they may not know you unless they're down in Georgia, in which case, of course, they know you. And that is that you're in fantastic shape. You exercise, you eat well, you sleep well, you do great things to de-stress. I know that you and your marvelous hubby, Tom, are active members of your local United Methodist Church. So there's a strong faith connection there that's very important. But I mention all of this because what we now know, you know, every day we're getting more and more data in, that over 90% of people who contract this have severe consequences, if not fatal consequences, are people who have at least one significant medical condition. It could be diabetes type 2, for instance, high blood pressure, a heart disease, and then one of the big boys is obesity. And of course, obesity is tied in with all of them, so you can see that it's sort of intimately. But you're in great shape, and I think that you did well because I think one reason why you did well is because you were. I think your immune system was strong and functional. What do you think about that, Kay?
I think that's 100% right. And the symptoms were certainly bad enough that I feel that had I not been a very healthy person, it could have gotten serious real quick. And I never had any shortness of breath, but I do at 65 years of age take care of myself, and I try really hard to be sure that I'm optimized in terms of my medical conditions and take a lot of care to be sure that my body can keep going for a long time, because my dad is about to turn 101. And, you know, there's an old joke about, hey, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. So I don't want to be in a position where I'm going to live a long time and be really sick. And so I think quality of life is so tied to health. And we know that our immune system's a huge part of that. So I'm not obsessed with it, but I do my very best to have a healthy lifestyle. And I think it has paid off. And part of that, I think, is being active. And to me, one of the things that really helped me with my recovery was I do have a door out of my bedroom that goes out onto my back deck. And our weather here, other than the tornadoes, has been extremely nice, which it always is here in April and March to some degree. It was nice enough that I could get outside, and not a lot of ability to exercise out there other than going up and down some steps. But I really think a little extra vitamin D from the sun and just listening to the birds singing and all of those things really helped me a lot.
Yeah, I just, you know, so interesting. I'm listening to you, and one of my patients had called me about a week ago, and this is a woman I've basically been coaching for quite some time, and she ended up over time literally reversing at least three medical conditions she had, including some real kick-ass type 2 diabetes, and she dropped about 75 pounds. And she's now, you know, physically fit, taking very good care of herself. She's also about 62. And she said, my God, I had no idea I would literally save my own life by spending all this time taking care of myself. And my message to all of you out there is, yeah, I mean, if you're in her position, you know, congratulations, keep it rocking. But if you're not, it's never too late by any means. It's never, ever too late. You got to understand how important that is, that you just start right now. Anything you could do, getting up, walking, you know, pitching all that processed food, you know, out of your house and starting to, you know, cook whole food, you know, getting better sleep, de-stressing. All of these things are so terribly important. You know, forget, you know, wedging yourself into a skinny pair of jeans. This is about saving your own life. And as we listen to Senator Kay Kirkpatrick from Georgia talk about what she went through and her own experience, I hope you all get the message that, wow, you know, taking care of yourself, laying down that strong foundation literally can save your own life. So terribly important. So, you know, Kay, I want to pivot a little bit. You're a state senator, and you're also a doctor, and you're also now a survivor, as it were, of COVID-19. How does all of this influence how you think as a legislator going forward?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The fact that I had the virus gives me a certain amount of credibility, and certainly it's gotten me in our local news media quite a bit in terms of my story, because people are looking for something positive to focus on because they're seeing a lot of negative every day on the news. But my background as a physician has really helped me a lot in being a legislator for a number of reasons. One is healthcare is a huge issue in every state and at the federal level. And so having some experience in that area makes me kind of a go-to person on those things. And that is good because all of us are down there at the Capitol to serve. Well, we're not at the Capitol now. We're in our houses. But that's an area where I feel like I can really bring some value to the conversation. And the leadership in my legislature in the Senate, they listen when I talk to them about healthcare issues. There are a lot of other things I don't know as much about that I have to learn about. But the other thing that physicians have that's a little bit of an advantage in the legislature is we're used to communicating with people every day, and we actively cultivate our listening skills, most of us. And of course, I'm a little biased. I think women are just innately better at that. But
hear.
Yeah. But I think communication and being detail-oriented, which is what physicians do, those are skills that I learned in my previous career that have made life somewhat easier being a legislator. Of course, there are some other factors that come into play that are not quite as positive, and I really miss my old job as a hand surgeon. That was positive every day, and I loved pretty much every minute of it, except maybe at 3 a.m. in the emergency room. But that is not necessarily true of life in the legislature. There's a lot of negativity and a lot of people doing things for strange reasons that don't necessarily make any sense. But I will tell you one thing. I think it's keeping me young. Learning new things and keeping your brain active certainly is very important in not aging. And I don't know if you'd agree with that, Pam, but
I completely, absolutely agree. You never, ever, ever stop challenging yourself mentally. I don't care what you're doing. If you're, you know, growing bonsais or you're learning a new language. I mean, it's so terribly important to keep pushing your own envelope, because you have to do that physically. Why wouldn't you do it mentally? I mean, you got to keep up your physical strength. You keep up your mental strength at the same time. It's really important to address yourself in a more mental and physical kind of holistic package here. You know, Kay, as I'm listening to you, are you involved in, I mean, is the legislature out of session right now? Are you getting involved in anything that's COVID related down there in Georgia?
Well, as a matter of fact, I spend pretty much every day on Zoom calls or on the phone because my husband and I both are involved in a volunteer group that is called the Medical Reserve Corps. And we work with the National Guard and are deploying volunteer medical professionals around the state for the COVID response. So that is a couple hours every day. And then my Senate caucus has a call every once in a while, the governor's office. I'm on the coronavirus task force. We had a call today. We usually have about one a week. We've got a Q&A with the governor's office for legislators once a week. We've got our local hospitals, schools, county governments. All of them have informational calls, and I do need to know what's going on. Some of them I'm just listening, but I need to be able to get information out to my constituents. It's important, and so I need to be very up to date in what's going on. So believe it or not, the days are just flying by. I have to plan how I'm going to get out there for my walk every day since the gyms are currently closed. And otherwise, I could just sit in a chair all day, which is not my nature. And that really gets a little, I get a little fidgety after a while. But that's how I'm spending my time.
Wow. Okay, so basically you're not letting the grass grow under your feet here. And in all the years I've known you, Kay, you've never allowed any moss or grass or anything to grow under your feet. You're always rocking and rolling, which is why, you know, you've done such a stellar job there as a state senator. And I know you've got an election coming up here too, don't you?
Yes, every 2 years. And
oh,
this
boy.
Will be the third time I've been through that. But I think campaigning is going to be a little different this year also, because I don't know that people are really going to want anybody knocking on their door. And certainly people are not going to be having gatherings, fundraisers or rallies or town halls or anything else that are going to be groups of people. So I think there's going to be a lot more digital, maybe more phone, more mail. I don't know. It's all evolving right now. But thankfully, I don't have a primary, so I've got a couple of months to kind of wrap up what I'm doing. And we will be going back in session, my guess is the middle of May, provided our numbers continue to decline, which they just have started doing.
You mean the COVID numbers, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I just saw that in Virginia they had their first session, and everyone was social distancing, and they all had masks on, which made for one hell of an interesting picture of the session.
And so the funny thing is, we have to vote live, so we've got a little red and a green button. There's no maybe button, and so. We got to be there physically to vote, and that's what our rules require. So to change the rules and allow for virtual voting or something else, we'd have to be there to change the rules. So what I suggested earlier today to some of my leadership is, you know, the Senate chamber is not very big because there's only 56 of us, but the House chamber, they have 180 people, and so we could theoretically spread out, mask up, change our rules to allow virtual voting or something, whatever we need to change, and then go home and then do the rest of it not live. And so I don't know if that's going anywhere, but legislatures all over the country are dealing with that because nobody wants to be sitting in a confined space right now. And in fact, it's very important that we're not doing that because we've learned the hard way, in my case, that one person can infect the whole room, which is kind of what happened in Georgia. So that's, I'm working on that. You know, I don't know if you're like me, but I think of these things sometimes in the middle of the night. And have to write them down before they go away.
I know, seriously. Well, you know, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to understand how to navigate a new normal. It, you know, there's no like, well, phew, that's done with, and then we move on. You know, when I was thinking about the last big outbreak with SARS-1, that was a coronavirus as well. It acted very, very differently. It did come from China yet again. You know, I think just about every epidemic outside of MERS, which was Middle Eastern, comes from China. And so out came this coronavirus back in 2002, and it was far more lethal, but it was much less transmissible. It was really quite fascinating, and they were gearing up for a vaccine and for some medical therapies. Unfortunately, no governments followed up, and that's all around the world. It was a global issue. No governments followed up by funding any of that so that we'd be prepared for the next one. And what didn't help in, you know, a kind of funny way was that coronavirus just plain disappeared. It went away. So once there was some level of herd immunity and all the rest of it, boom, gone. So there was nothing much to deal with. This is different. This is going to be with us very much like the flu in the sense that, I mean, we believe we don't know. Because we're just, you know, making it up as we go along and grabbing numbers and putting pieces of a puzzle together. But we think it'll probably be with us for a little bit unless we could kill it off with some serious herd immunity, meaning that enough people get it, the virus has no host to hop onto and it poops out. We don't know. We just honestly have no clue. Or maybe it'll just, you know, keep hanging out with us like the flu, in which case we're always going to have to be quite prepared, as we should be for the flu anyway. So, you know, we're getting a royal reminder about hygiene and washing hands and keeping your hands off your face and all the rest of it anyway. So as you go forward, Kay, as we kind of wrap this up, first of all, that's a heck of a story. I know that all of our listeners out there on the Herb Podcast Land are saying, phew, you know, a lot of lessons here. Take good care of yourself, and you, knock on wood, hopefully will have either no symptoms or mild to moderate symptoms, and then you'll recover. I hope that your antibodies, Kay, and I know I'm speaking for all of our, you know, listenership, that they're robust and fantastic, and you know, you will be immune. How long? Who the heck knows? That's more information we're going to need to know. And that, you know, given the fact that you're a doctor, someone who went through this, and also a legislator, tell us how this is going to influence how you approach this as the legislature opens up and more of this kind of thought process about the new normal is going to play out.
Well, you know, from the standpoint of the legislature, we're going to be picking up the pieces of our budget. We have to go back and do our budget for next year, and it's just going to be a disaster. So that's going to be the hardest thing to deal with. But I think there are some lessons about kind of how we do business in the future, and you alluded to the new normal. My friends and neighbors at this point don't even want to go out of their houses. People are getting used to it, and I'm really proud of our community because people are not pushing back on it really very much. There are certainly some people, businesses and individuals, that are in financial trouble because of this. But social distancing and being careful about our hygiene and all of those things, I think, are going to continue to be important, and we should have been doing a better job with that all along. The other thing is, I think there are a couple different ways that I've seen people respond to being so-called trapped in their houses. One is they either walk from their chair to their refrigerator and back, and that's it, which makes them depressed. They don't get up and get dressed and get active. They can have some negative impacts on their mental health by taking that approach, or taking advantage of the time to catch up on some things that you've wanted to do that you haven't done before. So I've learned some things as a human being that hopefully will give me a better perspective when I get back down to the legislature.
Wow. I mean, that's just so powerful. You know, it's really wonderful to hear a politician, a public servant like yourself, Kay, really speak from the heart and look at this at a much, much deeper level than just, you know, playing around with a bunch of numbers. And I know you got the budget and all the rest of it, but I think your direction is coming from a place where you really understand what people are going through. And I think that, you know, you serve that wonderful state of Georgia well by having that perspective. And I think you being a physician too is just another incredibly powerful asset to be able to offer the wonderful electorate down there and the people that you serve. So, you know, kudos to you for all of that. I know that a lot of my listeners want to hear more about you. So is there a social media or website place you can refer them to?
Well, I have my campaign website, SenatorKKirkpatrick.com. They can contact me through there, or they can contact me through my Senate email, or the senate.ga.gov website. I've got a bio page, a landing page with my contact information there. And I'm also on Facebook along with everybody else all the other middle-aged women in America.
So, well, wait a minute now. I love your Facebook page. It's, and you simply go, if you want to find out more about Senator Kay Kirkpatrick on Facebook and enjoy her wonderful wit and wisdom, you could just go to K4Georgia. Just spell it out. K4Georgia. And then you could learn more about Senator Kay Kirkpatrick and her marvelous oh, what can I say? Messages as she goes forward. And Kay, I want to personally wish you tons of luck with the upcoming election and all the crazy new normal that's going to be associated with getting that done. But there it is. If anybody could do it, it's you. Kay, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on the Her podcast today.
You know, Pam, I'm thankful for so many things right now. I mean, I'm thankful to be on the right side of the grass. I'm thankful that I have a house to be quarantined in. And I think one of the things that can help all of us is if we figure out where the needs are in our communities and try to help with those, whether it's procuring masks for people or collecting food for the local food bank or whatever it is, I think all of us have a role to play and something we can do to help. So that's, I think that's, again, a very therapeutic way to get through this. And thanks for the opportunity.
And all I could say is amen, amen. Those were incredibly wise words. That's also a call to arms and legs out there to get up and mobilize for your own community. It's a priceless gift. So what Dr. Kay Kirkpatrick said was absolutely spot on. Okay, now everyone out there, take a minute, hit iTunes, rate and review the show, because this was a fabulous opportunity for you to hear from Dr. Kirkpatrick and really understand what this virus is all about, what the experience is about, and also what a legislator who's gone through it all, who's also a doctor, has to say about it. All those messages, lots and lots of layers here. So run on over to iTunes right now. I want to hear from you. Why? Because, well, I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm host of the Her Podcast. Please follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Hey, thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.